This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome everyone to a new episode of New Books in Latin American Studies, a podcast channel on the New Books Network. I'm Candela Marini, and today we're talking with Nathaniel Gardner to discuss his most recent book, The Study of Photography in Latin America, Critical Insights and Methodological Approaches, published by the University of New Mexico Press in 2023. Nathaniel Gardner is a professor of Spanish and Latin American Studies at the University of Glasgow. He's the author of several books, including Como Agua para Chocolate, the novel and the film version, published in 2009, and Through Their Eyes, Marginality in the Works of Elena Poniatowska, Silvia Molina, and Rosa Nissan, published in 2007 by Peter Lang Press. The book that we're going to discuss today is the result of Nathaniel's critical conversations with 16 prominent Latin American photography scholars, including Boris Kozoy, John Mraz, Ana Mawad, Mauricio Lisowski, and Magdalena Broquetas, just to name a few. This is a really nice collection that should be read by anyone interested in Latin American photography. So welcome, Nathaniel, and so nice to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here. It's an honor to be interviewed about projects that I've been doing.
The honor is mine. So let's start with the conversation with you. Could you share a little bit about yourself, your formation, where you studied, and how you got interested both in Latin American fiction and photography?
Sure. I'm originally from California, and I studied both the United States and in the UK. After my bachelor's and master's degree at Brigham Young University, I went to University College London, and there I studied a PhD in Latin American studies with or under the tutelage of Stephen Hart. Now, during that time, I learned a lot about representation. That's kind of one of the main themes in my research is representation, be it through writing or be it through photos. And one of the people I worked on, you mentioned earlier in the book, one of my early publications was I worked on Elena Poniatowska. And one of the things I began to gradually learn as I was learning to say kind of new and interesting things about her is that she's worked a lot with photography. And so I began to think about ways in which I could explore the photography within her work. And eventually kind of one thing led to another, and that got me to working a lot of photography. So yeah, that was kind of how I got into it.
Nice. And in this book, you say that the goal of it was to create a bridge between the study of photography in Latin America and the English-speaking world. So my first question would be, why do you think such a project was necessary? And how would you describe the level of exchange from researchers in these different regions?
I mean, maybe the first thing to mention is that the study of photography around the world is growing in many different fields, many different areas. I, of course, work in an area of kind of like area language, culture studies, literature studies. But you see the study of photography growing all over the place. And like in other fields, sciences, history, art. And one of the things that I noticed myself is that I would be reading books on Latin American photography published in the United States, because that seems to be on the rise, especially amongst professors and other colleagues that are working in the field of Latin American studies, or you know, just kind of cultural studies, Latin American studies, more generally language studies, literature studies. But I also knew a large number of researchers that work on Latin American photography in Latin America. It's actually a group which is quite well connected amongst themselves. And one of the things that I was noticing is that the books, a lot of, now this is not exclusive, but a lot of the books are, and articles are again published on Latin American photography weren't referencing a lot of the research and methods, or use of the methods that I would see people using in Latin America. And I said, there's got to be a way of sharing the knowledge, because I saw a lot of really good relevant methods, ways of helping researchers in the English speaking world have their research be more relevant to Latin America. And I thought to myself, well, what if I were to create a book in where I look at some of these methods that these researchers use. I look at the research they're doing. I talk about how they're working, and get, in a sense, them talking to each other, get, or make their research more known. Like you were saying just before we started this interview, there were some things I didn't know. Well, that's the point. That's the whole point. And I mean, that's exactly the reaction I want people to have when I read this book. Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's so much interesting work being done, and it's not that well known, unfortunately. So talking about this difference of approaches and the kind of methodological approaches that you observed in Latin American research, you say that when analyzing the panorama of the things being done, one of the things you see is that there is a different way of engaging with theory, at least different from that of the North Atlantic world. Could you talk to us about those differences?
No, that's a really good question. So one of the people that I spoke with, that I worked with when I was creating this book, that I, we had a lot of really good critical dialogues, and we looked at his work and his methods, was a man named John Mraz. Now, he's considered one of the patriarchs, I guess you would say, of the study of photography in Latin America. And he best described the way in which he used theory as a type of scaffolding. So, you know, theory, as you're creating your work, your research gets put up, and you do a lot of work there. But the main focus really are the images themselves, what we can learn from the images, how they can influence our thoughts, our ideas, society, understanding what they mean. And so it really is kind of the focus of the image and less so the theory. And that, I'd say, is one of the bigger differences is and what he says there is, you know, so as you begin to finish this, just like you would a building, you begin to kind of take the scaffolding down so that you're focusing on really more on the arguments, the ideas, and the focus and our nuanced and new understanding of the images. And I would say that kind of method, although maybe not everyone describes it that way, but that type of method of focusing more on images more than text, and the role of images and understanding of images, tends to get repeated a lot through the study of photography in Latin America. And I'm not sure if it's necessarily that everyone agreed on that method, or if that was kind of what was getting filtered through peer reviews and publications and things like this, or if that's just the way it is because that's what the environment tends to naturally create. But that's kind of one of these bigger differences, whereas you will see a lot more discussion on theory in say, for example, English-speaking North America, Europe, places like that. And so I'd say that's kind of one of the bigger differences that you look at, this kind of use of theory or theory for theory's sake, is less of a focus in Latin American study of photography than you find in other parts of the world.
And how do you explain that? Why is there this difference in focus and more maybe in, I don't know, documentary images or political issues and things like that?
I'm not 100% sure, but what is true is that there's a lot of the very first kind of the pioneers in the study of photography in Latin America, they tend to have focus be more image-based in their focus. And it might be that that influence itself has radiated outwards as people look at that. It might as well also be due to the fact that they come from such a wide variety of disciplines, as opposed to the photography studies that you'll find, say, for example, in English-speaking North America or Western Europe. And so it might be that the common denominator that they have across the fields are the images. And so that's why the studies tend to focus on that common denominator. Whereas oftentimes in certain cultural studies fields, theory can almost be a common denominator in some cases, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think this is one of your book's main questions. Would you say then that there is a particular Latin American way of studying photography?
There's definitely a trend or different trends that you can see. And that is, again, like I was saying, to focus on image, to find very direct applications of how photography influences life, history, thought, way in which people see, observe, and record the world. And the study of that, the study of how images are used in these different activities or aspects of society, is definitely one of the ways in which we can see this happening. No, definitely. Very interesting.
In the conversation that you have with Mauricio Lisowski, who sadly passed away in 2022, he proposes that what is needed or what is lacking in Latin American research is a canon to struggle against in the study of photography, something similar to what Beaumont Newhall's The History of Photography did. And he says, and I can quote him here, "We do not have canons in that same sense in Latin America. Therefore, for me, the difference is that we must invent the canon and destroy it at the same time. By this, I mean that we must establish the criteria that helps identify what is relevant and deserves attention, and sometimes this means to establish what is good and what is not, and then soon criticize or reevaluate those choices," which is what I mean by destroying. And here I end the quote on page 198. So what do you make of this idea? Were you surprised when you first heard this?
Now, when I speak with Mauricio, and I wish he could join us because he had so much to say, but of course, sadly, that's not possible anymore. But he began talking about, we need a canon so we can destroy it, so we can find it. I was like, why would you want something you could destroy? At first, when he was saying this, it didn't quite make that sense. But then the more he talked about it, the more it made perfect sense. Because, of course, once you have a canon, like we have literary canons, we have visual canons, photography canons, art canons, then you have something, you've got this kind of set of images, in this case of photography, against which other images are valued or not valued. And then, of course, you get discussions and arguments beginning, critical ideas and, you know, critical kind of arguments and thoughts kind of saying, well, this needs to be there because of this, or this needs to be there because of that. And that gives kind of a sense, a society, a tool, a critical tool with which to engage critically, academically, with a lot of images that are out there. And you don't have to have that to have these things going on. But Mauricio's point is that it would be helpful. One of the things that I kind of talked about, thought about more and more as I did this project of the study of photography in Latin America, was that just how little the whole of the global South, I mean, Latin America, but yes, but the whole of the global South, you know, Africa, parts of Asia, Southeast Asia as well, other parts, just how little they appear in these books that we'll talk about, you know, like the World Book of Photography, you know, the world history of photography, things like this. It's not uncommon for photographers from the global South to only make up 1 or 2% of these collections. And, What this means is that in this capture of the world, not all of the world is captured equally. And I began asking myself, why is this? And I mean, I don't have proof of this, but one thing that is true is that those that are captured the most are the ones that kind of have their visual canons. And the ones that are captured the least are the ones that tend not to really have a traditional canon. And I thought, well, as people are writing these books, they're wanting to draw upon projects that are canonical projects and, you know, include. And I thought, well, if one of the things that might, one of the ways in which having a canon might possibly benefit the world canon of photography would be to give a critical body upon which to draw for these kind of world canons of photography to see. And it might lead to seeing more of the global South in the world visual canon.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. At first glance, you think, wait, why a canon that you need to destroy? But then, yeah, that helps to give it more visibility and make room in the conversation with other photographers around the world, for sure. It makes sense, I think. And maybe related to this, one of the ways that maybe Latin America does appear in works outside Latin America is actually through its images, but images taken by others, not from Latin America. And this is a point that was brought up by a lot of the researchers, I think, the dominance of the foreign gaze in the perception of Latin America and even in the study of Latin America. What challenges has this brought to the study of photography in Latin America, and how are they being overcome now?
Kind of two points. Maria del Carmo, who's in the book, she mentions about how, because of the history of photography and it being essentially, I mean, one of the things that's really interesting in the book, and this is something that Boris Kosoy mentions, is that photography actually existed in Brazil in 1833. It existed before the official existence of photography in France, you know, with Louis Daguerre. And that was done by, you know, an isolated Frenchman who was working and living in Campinas, Brazil. And there's documentary evidence and proof of this. But one of the things that you notice is that because of the way in which photography kind of was given to the world from kind of France outward, if you like, that meant that most of the people that first knew how to run the very kind of technological process of photography in the early days, in the 1800s, were foreigners. They weren't Latin American. So you get foreigners moving into the market of Latin America. And what's this mean, though? It means that if you have foreigners, you have a lot of Europeans, some Americans, taking photography into Latin America, setting up photography shops to, of course, take portraits of people, but also to take other pictures, landscape, document what we see around, look at cities, peoples, cultures, ethnicities, etc. So now, of course, all of this is being captured, not necessarily because of colonialism, but because of the way in which technological movement works or worked at that time into Latin America. And that means that European visions of Latin America are the very first, or among the very first visions that we see of Latin America in photography, in history of photography. But this also means that the people that they train who are local, they're taught these certain visions. And so certain patterns of seeing Latin America do get repeated, at least at first. And then you do begin to see a breaking away from these patterns as well. You get people like Manuel Álvarez Bravo in Mexico, who very much admires Edward Weston and Tina Mulvey's work, both foreigners working and living in Mexico. But then you begin to see him breaking away from it. So, you know, while you see Edward Weston using the picturesque towards the end, or later on you see Manuel Álvarez Bravo employing more of an anti-picturesque use of photography as well. So kind of forging their own paths. And this is something that's been going on. And but this idea of the foreign gaze, I think the way in which photography entered Latin America does lend itself to a certain repetition of certain gazes and theories and themes, because if people are finding inspiration in old photography in Latin America, that's going to have at least some element or aspect of Europeanness to it as well, or even North Americanness.
Yeah, and at the same time, photography was itself feeding from like previous visual traditions also about Latin America and a certain foreign gaze already present through other media.
That's right.
Yeah, and how is it being? This is how is it being a challenge or no? What strategies are researchers trying to use in order to avoid this foreign gaze, or at least to deconstruct it?
I mean, to a certain extent, just being aware of it is probably the most important thing. To be aware of, you know, where these things come from, where these influences come from, and ultimately, photographers are going to photograph the world the way they want to. And we are all a product. I mean, this, of course, comes from the world of writing, but I remember Elena Poniatowska saying to me at one point, and of course, this is something I've heard Carlos Fuentes say something similar. And this, of course, gets fed from Juan Rulfo, who was a teacher to both Carlos Fuentes and Elena Poniatowska. They've all said that, you know, people write from their own experiences. And I would say, you know, that photography is similar, if not the same. You know, they photograph from their own experiences. And if their experience has been with foreign images, and maybe exotification. Well, that's part of their experience, and it's not necessarily unexpected or unusual, or maybe even necessarily wrong for them to do this type of thing if that is what they want to do, if that's the kind of the images that they want to create. I think the problem might be is if they feel constrained and they feel they can't explore other ideas. But I don't really get photographers saying things like that. I've never heard someone say, oh, I feel limited by what I can do. I mean, we're all products of our own environment, and we're all going to produce according to what that gives us. But I think the important thing is to kind of see this within its own context and realize that if you see certain things, well, then it might be linked to these influences that are out there, and to become aware of that.
Another important point that your conversations bring up is the importance of having institutions to support this kind of research, right? They talk about the state of the archives, the number of institutions dedicated to photography, the need for more resources and tools to support the research. Yet, in spite of these challenges, it is a community that is very much well represented in your book. It is a community that embraces collaborative projects and that little by little has managed to build departments and institutions that are playing now a leading role in the region as a whole. Could you speak more about the importance of these collaborative efforts and how we can support today these institutions and archives dedicated to photography?
Yeah, no, definitely. I kind of wish some of the people that I spoke with, we could be here so they could say a little bit more directly how to support. But one of the themes that came out as I was speaking with all the different researchers was this concern. And I never really asked any questions about archives themselves. It was just something that kind of naturally came out in the conversations that we had. This, you know, kind of concern, you know, we've got all this material and it's not getting the proper, you know, care that it should get. It needs to be better organized. I'm concerned that, you know, we could get some administrators that just decide that this isn't worth keeping and get rid of it. Or, you know, the fact that some of these archives could be really useful, but they're just, there's less investment than what they would hope in it. And so there's this kind of real fear, I guess, or concern more than fear that a lot of these primary sources, primary historical, social sources, could disappear very easily because of a lack of investment. And so they don't really say, as I spoke with the different researchers, how to get, except for maybe, you know, local governments and local institutions to kind of invest in them, do more with them. And again, they do talk about how there's so many archives out there that are so useful and have so much valuable information, but again, more knowledge needs to be known around these things. I'm trying to remember the name of a book that had a list of different archives that were really useful as well, but the name escapes me at the moment. But if I remember, I'll mention what it is. But these type of materials are very good to have. But one of the things that they also mentioned was some of the archives that are doing a marvelous job in conserving or, you know, keeping and maintaining and taking care of these visual archives from Latin America. For example, I'll mention three, although there's more, but some of the three kind of names that really come up are the Instituto Moreira Salles in Brazil, which is a private venture that not only has a huge collection of photography, but other materials as well. In Uruguay, there's the Centro de Fotografía de Montevideo. This is a public initiative run by the local government that first started out, I believe, trying to keep a photographic archive of Montevideo in Uruguay. And it's kind of grown, and they've gotten a lot of support from the local government, so they're able to do a lot of things. And it's Centro de la Imagen in Mexico City, which has grown out of different collections and different projects, but now it's kind of, this is kind of publicly funded archive as well, Center of Photography, and they're a great space, all three, because they have exhibitions, they hold on to books, materials, they publish journals, and they really do create centers for the study of photography in Latin America. And I mean, these are kind of institutions that could potentially play important roles in the creation of any type of future canon of Latin American photography, anything like this, or just, you know, and as they build these important collections, it gives them visibility. The people that we do see get promoted, oftentimes these institutions have a role in helping some of these photographers get promoted outside or within their own spheres and without, you know, having echoes that land without.
Yeah. And luckily, there are also more and more digital collections now, which will also help in visibilizing these collections, not having to travel all the way to these different archives. But I have experienced myself this idea of seeing photographs and materials just under someone's drawers or something like that. And it's like, no, they need to be protected.
No, this is true.
In the voices and views that you collected here, there's an emphasis on Mexico and Brazil. There are, I think, four specialists for each country. Would you say this is representative of the amount of research that is being carried out in these countries in particular, or how did you choose who to include?
No, definitely. When I first envisioned the project, well, maybe I should back up and mention very briefly how the project came to be. So, This project first came to be as part of, I was in Mexico. I do a lot of research in Mexico. I was in Zacatecas, Mexico. I was on sabbatical, and I was really focusing, reflecting on a lot of these lessons that I'd learned, specifically from John Mraz as well, because he's been a mentor to many people, including myself, on how to study photography. And I was thinking, there's so much wisdom that this guy has not, or that this academic has not published yet. And there, you know, if the day of tomorrow he decides, you know, it's time for me to buy a boat and go fishing and retire, that would be lost. And so I thought, you know, how can I get some of this information out there? And so I decided that I would write an article on his methods, his works, and things like this, and in a sense in direct contact with him, speaking with him, looking at his work, discussing it, thinking about it. In that sense, in that case, very much framed as an interview. And I did that. And so then I went from there and moved on into that published very, very, very well, very quickly. And then I decided that I would expand the project into a book project. And at first I envisioned, in a sense, like 20 people, one from every Latin, or 18 people, one from every Spanish-speaking country or Portuguese-speaking country. But then I realized that that was going to be too big and it was going to be that practical. And then, so what I tried to do was get a wide spread across the Spanish and Portuguese speaking Americas. Now, you will notice there's no one from the Caribbean in there. That's not intentional. What I wanted was to find someone's to work with there. But people that I did find that I wanted to work with, they weren't available for me to work on the project. It wasn't something that was possible at that time. But I do hope to spend into there. But very much, I began to realize as well that I wanted to get kind of a broad view of Latin America, but at the same time, it became apparent that it would be really useful to focus as well, or get a few good, strong samples from where the study of photography is built up the most, and that is in Brazil and in Mexico. And so that's why they get more page, you know, but that's why they get more pages in the book. They get more focus. Yeah.
And I imagine you had a lot of fun having these conversations with all these different researchers.
Oh, 100%. I can only say wonderful things about these people. They're so generous with their time, with their abilities. They helped me find images. They helped me to get permissions. They were so generous with their time. They asked nothing in return. And they, in a sense, I think, caught the vision as well of what this is, kind of what the potential this project has. And I mean, one of the great things that's coming out of this is the fact that the book is being translated as we speak in Spanish. It will come out in the Universidad Iberoamericana in Spanish either later this year or early into 2025.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. It's going to start a new series on visual studies that's coming out of that university. And so I'm honored to be the first person to be in that series. But it also kind of, I think, speaks to the relevance of this project. Mm-hmm. The fact that it was adopted so quickly into other areas. I mean, one of the things that I, as a researcher on Latin America, am keen to do is to have resonance within Latin America. You know, I want people to be reading my things. I want what I write to be relevant. And so to see things like this happen, in a sense, is reminding me that what I am doing is something that people are interested in reading about or seeing and learning about where in that in my field of research, my geographical field of research.
Yeah, and translation is key in that respect, and open access and things like that. Yeah,
definitely, definitely.
And you just mentioned that they helped you with the images rights and things like the copyrights. And I was going to ask you about it, actually. You include a few images with every conversation you had. What was the goal of including these images?
So the images, if you'll notice, they're very eclectic. There's all difference. But I decided to use images. And I can't say enough great things about Elise McHugh, who was my editor at University of New Mexico Press, because from the very first time we spoke on this project, she's like, the images, Nathaniel, we have to have lots of images. This is a book on photography. We need to have images. And I was like, yes, of course. And they were so supportive. And, I think there's something like 87 images, and they were saying, you can go up to 100 if you want
wow.
to, that's fine. And And I'm finding that's a very kind of vanguard attitude and vision. And I'm very grateful to them for that, because I think it's helped the book become great. But the images themselves, I wanted them to represent the fields of research that these people, that these researchers are working in. So I wanted the readers to see, what are the images that represent these people's work? And so you'll notice the book comments the images less. The images are there to kind of showcase the type of images that are inspiring research in Latin America. And that's why there's such a wide variety of them.
Yeah.
And I will say as well, one of the things I wanted to do with images was to get a lot of photographers in front of English-speaking readers that they're not seeing the same old images that they're always seeing, but get more knowledge about what is out there in this book.
Right, not just the researchers, but also the photographers. At the end of your book, you bring up several potential projects or avenues of research that will likely flourish in the years to come. You mentioned the study of lesser-known photographers, and then particular areas like photography of migrants, children, women. Would you like to talk about these areas and why you think there's much that can be learned from these areas of study?
Yeah, one of the things that we're seeing happening, one of the words you'll hear spoken a lot in different circles, is this idea of decolonizing the curriculum, decolonizing histories, decolonizing thinking. And that's one of the ways of describing the decolonization is inclusion, to include more, to expand. And one of the best archives that is, I think you could argue that it's decolonized from the beginning, is photography. I mean, writing has been around since modern civilization, or since civilization has been around, even early civilization has been around. But photography is a very new addition to all of that. And thankfully, it's a very democratic technology. And this means that increasingly, I mean, in the early days, you get more kind of people with more money and more scientifically inclined, because the process to take photos was so expensive, and it had so many steps to it. And you had to have certain knowledges of chemistry and things like this. Whereas nowadays, everyone has images. Everyone, has an image making machine in their pocket, in their purse, in their backpack, in their bag, whatever they might be carrying with them. And they are constantly using images to represent their lives, more so even than writing, I would argue, as well. So what does this mean? It means that there's this huge, vast archive out there, visual archive, in which we represent our lives. And even from the earliest photography, we see sectors of society are getting represented through photography that weren't getting represented other ways. A very good example of this, Mauricio Lisowski, that we mentioned earlier, he found an archive done by a man named Cristiano Jr. of slaves that were working in Brazil. And not slaves working in the fields, but slaves who were working in homes, slaves who were working as employees, if you like, in public. And we see this set of images. I think there's 140, 130 images in the collection not don't remember exactly, it might be a bit more, might be a bit less, but knowing this, seeing this opens up a whole new understanding of, you know, social constructs in Brazil in a time when slavery was common. And, you know, photography allows all these things. We don't really have that much writing on these things, a little bit, but the visual opens up new ways of understanding the past. It's the primary sources that we can all work with and include people like migrants, people, you know, children, adults, people or women, people who are less visible in hegemonic versions of history. Photography is a way of opening these up and adding information on these different sectors of society back in.
Very true. I know we are running out of time, but before wrapping up, could you tell us what you're working on now?
Sure. So I have a project which is done, but it will be out very soon. So there's a book called A Companion to the Study of Latin American Photography that's published by a press here in the UK. And Tamas Press, and they that book itself studies things that we can learn about Latin American society through, or Latin America through photography, ways in which photography helps us understand Latin America better. So we look at things like the canon, we look at things like women in photography, children in photography, people in power in photography, people, the marginal in photography, migrants in photography, photography as translation, as a way of translating the past. There's lots of different subjects there that will come out in that book. I'm looking forward to seeing that in print very soon.
Well, so you have that book and the translation coming too.
Yeah, the translation. Although, I mean, the translation, I'm not the translator, so that's someone else's work is doing that. But the translation of my book is coming out. Plus, this book is coming out. And right now, I am working with two of the people from the book, Ariel Arnal and Alberto del Castillo, on a project that deals with theory from the Global South, understanding the Global South. Now, this is kind of one of the next areas. One of the things that I've learned, again, through this project is that more critical tools can be made available to help our understanding of photography from the Global South. And so we're getting photographers across Latin America to write kind of critical theory to help us understand images or photos from the Global South better. So, custom made tools, so to speak. And no more, you know, using foreign theory kind of molded into the shapes that might work for images in the Global South, but rather getting people in the Global South writing about ways in which, or, you know, creating critical tools that will help us to understand the Global South better. So hopefully that will help not only people in and across Latin America and other places, but us who are in other places as well, to kind of use tools that are custom made for certain archives, if you like.
Wow, that's a really cool project. Very exciting. Do let me know when it comes out. Well, once again, thank you so much for accepting our invitation. I had a lot of fun reading your book and chatting with you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.